This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is an annual guest, a return guest, David Shea, who runs the Charge Card Program at GSA. David, what's your official title there?
I'm the director of the Office of Charge Card Management and the Federal Acquisition Service at the General Services Administration.
Very cool. And we get together every year because there's a lot of things going on with the charge card program that important to both sides of the fence. The feds, who have 3 million people using this thing, and the vendor community, who are seeing spend in areas that traditionally perhaps they haven't seen that particular spend through a charge card before. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for coming in.
Great. Thanks for being for allowing me to be here.
Let's start off with basically whatever you want to start off with regarding the program. What's the scope of this program? Then we'll get into the 13 spend and the 14 year to date.
Okay, well, give you some statistics to start off with. The spend on the program right now is year to date in FY14 is $18.2 billion. It's about 60 million transactions. 11.6 billion of that is purchase card. $5 billion is in travel, and $1.6 billion in fleet so far this year. Now, if we look at FY13, the total spend in purchase was $16.5 billion. Total spend in travel was $7.4 billion, and total spend in fleet was $2.2 billion. So, total for FY13 was $26 billion in spend, and so far this year we're at 18.
Okay, the scope of the program. Before we get into the total scope of the program, the travel side. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's 7.4 for 13. That's pretty healthy considering the travel restrictions that have been imposed. Yes, no. Is that up, down from say 3 or 4 years back? Do we know?
Yeah, it's down. Okay. In FY11, total travel spend was $9.6 billion.
Okay.
And in FY12, it was $9 billion. So we've gone from that down to $7.4 billion in FY13, and year-to-date in FY14, down to $5 billion.
Okay, and the purchase spend is also down. I think the high was pushing $20 billion, maybe broke $20 billion 4 or 5 years back.
Yeah, but $19 billion was our high.
That's what I thought. And so that's it's kind of matching the overall government spend, but the travel restrictions were in place well before the spending crunch came in.
Well, you've had, as not a surprise, a number of factors driving what's going on with the spend. First, the impact of sequester, the impact of continuing resolutions, and you also have the OMB restrictions on travel. What's happened with conference spend, and then you have the activities related to the wars closing out, thank goodness, and so reduced spend there. But we're actually seeing, in FY14, our spend the first quarter of the fiscal year was pretty low, but by February. The FY14 spend crossed above the trend line, crossed above the trend line for FY13. So spending in every month through cards since mid-February has been above the trend line for last year. Now, we've not made up for the decrease experienced in the first quarter yet, but there is more spending going on, and I think it's because There's more stability in terms of agency managers being able to understand what they can spend. Mm-hmm. You know, when you don't have those budgets being allocated down to the operating units for managers to understand what they can do and not do, that has an impact on the spending patterns. But we're looking at 3.4 million cards or accounts in circulation in the program, and that's remained fairly level. And when you talk about the 3 million plus people who actually have the cards, the impact of the program is much broader than that, because obviously the ability to use the cards to support things like firefighting teams in the Forest Service fighting wildland fires, supporting defense of the country, homeland security, all the various things that these government agencies do that are part of their missions, the benefit is actually much larger from the cards than just the number of cards and accounts themselves.
Right. Well, I mean, initially the program, we were talking about this before we started, the program is technically pushing 30 years old overall.
Yes.
And the use of the cards initially was so frontline managers could accomplish things, purchasing things that were necessary that day, and not go through what was then a tedious paper-based six to 10 week process.
Right. If you were lucky, and you know, this harkens back to the roots of the purchase card program were in the 80s. It wasn't, it hadn't formally become the SmartPay program at that time. Our first SmartPay contract, SmartPay 1, was awarded by GSA in 1998. But you're right, you know, use of the purchase card in the government is borderline 30 years. And when you look at the travel card, the timing is about the same. So the government has always been a leader in you know, corporate card use. And we continue to strive to find new areas to use it where it's a benefit to the agency. In total, from SmartPay 1 to present, the refunds agency have earned total approximately $2.25 billion. So that's money that agencies can farm back into mission simply by choosing a different way to pay, maximizing use of the cards.
Yeah, and that's something that we should really emphasize here. The card program has always been basically a for-profit program for the government. It is a charge card program, so you're not, you know, accruing debt on these cards. It's paid on a very regular monthly
basis. Right, every cycle it's paid off. We don't carry a rotating credit balance.
Right.
And we don't use the word profit, but it's money that can be farmed back into agency programs.
Right. I don't care what you call it. The rebate structure side of this is very positive because the vendors win, the banks aren't hurting as a result, the government wins, and you've got a paper trail of all of the spend that's really extraordinary.
Right, and actually the electronic records on a transaction are pretty impressive in terms of the data that you can see. But you're right. I mean, I think one could look at it as when an agency's paying bills, you know, have they? I call it strategic payments. Have they looked at it as an opportunity, as a revenue opportunity? And so, when you're looking at your portfolio of payments that you have to make, are you maximizing use of the card program? And one of the things we recommend that our customer agencies do with their servicing contractor bank is consider doing what we call an accounts payable review. And the bank will come in and look at all the payments the agency makes, and as a first take on that, come back and report out on payments to vendors the agency's making where the vendor accepts the card, but the agency isn't paying with the card. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. There may be perfectly valid reasons why they're paying the way they're paying, but it's the start of a dialogue. It raises the question, why are we paying them in this way? And another thing that you can see happen is that the way a particular vendor is paid across the enterprise, because these government organizations are so huge, may vary. So one region may pay with a charge card, another region may pay in another way. And so the question then becomes, and it's a great dialogue to have, is, okay, why are we paying in these different ways? Again, is there a reason or not? Is there an opportunity to earn more rebate to farm back into program? Because, I mean, the budgets aren't getting any bigger.
No, they're not. The budgets aren't getting any bigger. And you know, the ability to look at something like smaller task orders on other vehicles as opposed to micro purchases and paying for task orders via the charge card is very real.
Well, we've got the common thinking is that, and as you pointed out, the original conception of the cards was to give frontline managers the ability to purchase relatively inexpensive items quickly. But it does, the purchase cards do have a role in contract payments. And certainly we have more than $6 billion a year in payments at $10,000 and higher. So when you say, you know, what's the benefit to the merchant? Well, they're guaranteed payment. They're going to get payment in 1 to 3 days. They don't have to deal with cash. They don't have to deal with checks. They get the data associated with this. So with, you know, standard government contract payment terms being net 30, if you're going to be paid in 1 to 3 days as opposed to 30 days, what's that worth to you, right? So you look at the value proposition as a merchant, you know, what's the cost of money involved?
Right.
So I think a lot of vendors have found, and not all, but a lot have found that this is a very valuable proposition to be able to do this. And on top of this, they get spend data that they're not necessarily going to get with checks or cash or some other payment method. You know, not that the government would be paying in cash, and there's been a big move for many years in the government to get out of checks as a result of the Debt Collection Improvement Act and so on and so forth. So I think it's a matter of, again, going back to this concept of strategic payments and saying, how do I optimize how I pay my bills? The cards are another tool in the toolbox, mm-hmm. and I have this, and they're unique in that the data can be better, the controls can be better, and you have this opportunity to earn refunds. So it's not all just about the refunds. But think about it, Mark, when somebody, like you have a criminal that law enforcement is trying to catch, there's two or three ways they typically locate these people if they're on the lam, right?
Yep.
One of them is they use a cell phone. Another is they use an ATM machine. Or the third thing is they use a credit card.
Right.
So, I mean, one of the least intelligent things someone can do is abuse a charge card, because if anybody's watching, you know, we have the data, the tools, and the technology to identify these problems. And so in this day and age,
hold that thought. Let's talk about the total training when we come back. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio. I'm here with David Shea of the Office of Charge Card Management from GSA. Back in a minute. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is David Shea. He's the director of the Office of Charge Card Management at GSA, which means basically he monitors or helps monitor 3.4 million cards and the spend from those cards, not personally, mind you. but we're going to talk about how that occurs. So, number one, you've got a new card manager certification program. But for years now, every time we get together, you tell me about all of the training that GSA offers.
Yes.
To the agency. So just hit that any way you want.
Okay. First off, in terms of the card monitoring, let's just level set there that the agencies are responsible for monitoring their cardholders and their activity, and we give them the tools to do that. And certainly one of the tools, as you point out, is training. And so we're on the cusp of, matter of fact, it's next week, for government card managers only. We're holding a virtual training conference. We've got over 2,500 people registered for this conference. And our hope is to be able to do it virtually and in person in all on alternating years, because the human contact and the networking is still very important to share best practices and things
like that. You get more juice flowing, people open up more.
Right, but
they don't do that on a computer.
Yeah, it's not a certain thing. It's still in process, but the virtual conference will be held this year. We'll have over 100 classes that'll be offered. The certification program that you mentioned is new. We call it the CCCM. It's a Certified Charge Card Manager program, and it consists of the manager having to take 12 charge card management classes. Six are required and six electives, and the card manager also has to have 6 months of hands-on experience working with cardholders and managing cards before they can apply to my office for the certification. And then they have the routine maintenance training requirement as
just like any professional
right
cert.
It's consistent with matter of fact, it's identical to what's in OMB circular A123 appendix B, which is the card management touchstone, you know, guidance in the government. So we're really excited to launch this certification program. We issued the guidance on it in June, and just starting to roll it out now, and I think we're at the beginning of a journey. We're going to see how it goes. But we're looking forward to making sure that everybody has that sort of fundamental basis of knowledge and experience to be able to effectively manage the card programs, because there is so much to it. I mean, it's not just setting up cardholders and establishing the controls on those accounts and monitoring transaction activity and dealing with issues as they come up, alerting management if there's misuse or abuse or things like that. It's a big role.
It is. How, you know, do you have a rough idea how many APCs are out there? APCs are the people in the agencies responsible for monitoring programs in particular offices or operating divisions. So,
well, when you look at an agency, they're going to have a headquarters, what we call AOPC, Agency or Organization Program Coordinator. And the people at headquarters are known as level ones. And then you can go down as low as 7 levels, depending on how big an organization is. So when you get down to like a post camp or station in the military, you know, you may have a level 4, a level 5 AOPC. So, and these people do this as a collateral duty. It's not a full-time job for them to manage.
Right, it's not a job title.
Right, so they've got another job, plus they're doing this part-time. And I think one of our responsibilities at GSA as we look at program design is how do we keep this manageable, that it can, you know, the cards can be managed effectively given the amount of time available to manage them, given what other people have to do. But the one estimate I saw, and I think the number is probably low, was about 40,000 AOPCs across the government. But I think that number is probably low.
That's a lot of people to train.
That's a lot of people to train. We, in addition to our annual card manager training event, and there's a lot of train the trainer activity going on, we have cardholder and AOPC training online on our website, smartpay.gsa.gov.
Been there a few times.
I bet. And we've had, you know, hundreds of thousands of people trained with that training, because you always have churn. You always have turnover. Particularly at the lower levels of the organization in terms of who's an AOPC. So there's a constant demand for training, and that's an essential part of the internal control program, is to make sure that people are trained and these cards are managed properly. So another way to get training is through our website. Another way is under all our contracts with our contractor banks. The banks are required to provide training where 20 or more people in an agency require training at no additional cost, so they can get the training in the systems. You know, it's not just about cards. It's interesting how people think. You know, they think about charge cards, they think about just small transactions. They don't realize all the data systems, controls, data, operational guidelines, meetings, networking groups, all the things that go on in this community to make this program work, that is such great benefit to the government and to the taxpayer, and I believe can be a further benefit. But where we provide training through many different lanes, if you will, to help keep this workforce up to date and armed with the tools to manage the program effectively.
Well, you know, you have all those people out there. I'm actually not surprised that the number of the AOPCs is by your estimate, low, because that'd still be a lot of people to manage, and especially when you get that granular. You know, the purchase side is one of it. The fleet side seems easier, but I'm sure there's a lot of nuances there that's not. The travel side has been in flux for a long time. So monitoring travel and that, you know, the cash advance side of travel, all of that. And you know, one of the reports that I saw, and it may have been out of your office, that the cash advance for travel is almost a thing of the past now anyway.
Well, there's you know, the way card acceptance has progressed in the country and in the world, there's generally very little need for a cash advance. And controls, you can set what the cash advance amount is on a travel card. An agency can choose not to offer that functionality if they want. A number of agencies, as a good practice or best practice, when a traveler's not in travel status, they reduce the spending limit on the card to $1. Across the board. So that card can't be used to do anything until that employee is going on travel. So there's every card comes with a spending limit, and usually multiple spending limits. So you mentioned the cash advance limit on a travel card. Every card has a per transaction spending limit. Every card has a monthly spending limit. These are set by management based on, you know, business need. And they can be changed either upward or downward depending on what happens with the mission. Mm-hmm. Every cardholder by policy has to be trained before they're given a card, and they have to have refresher training. So not only do we have the OMB circular I mentioned before that covers this, but we also have a relatively new law which mirrors a lot of what's in the OMB circular and even takes it a level further, and that's the Charge Card Abuse Prevention Act of 2012, where for the first time, purchase card violation reports have to be provided to OMB every 6 months, every spring and fall. The reports deadlines hit, and the reports are actually submitted summer and winter to the director of OMB. So and the idea here is that where a purchase card is misused or abused, to show that agency management is dealing with that when it happens. But again, overwhelmingly, everything we see, the cards are used for appropriate reasons, mm-hmm. and the spending is correct. So, mm-hmm. you know, where we have these outliers, they've got to be dealt with.
Okay. You're migrating towards the chip card, towards the European model. You want to explain that a little bit?
Well, the standard in the industry is starting to change in the U.S. and some of your listeners may know them as chip and PIN or chip and signature cards, and this is where the charge card has a computer chip in it. They're much more common in countries outside the U.S., particularly Western Europe. But our customer agencies are starting to experiment with these types of cards where it fits with their mission needs. So at this point, out of the 3.4 million cards we have deployed, we have about 400 of these EMV cards. They're primarily travel cards used by government travelers on official business, again, primarily in Europe, where you'll find situations where ATM machines in Europe and transportation kiosks at places like train stations sometimes require an EMV card. And so it makes sense for these travelers to have that functionality.
So we can pretty much ID the organizations that would be using this, state, USAID, et cetera.
Agencies that would have a presence over in Europe or frequently have travel. Yes, certainly. And so the agencies are just starting to put their toes in the water on this. There is going to be movement in the U.S., both on the consumer side and the corporate side, towards EMV over the next several years. There's a policy called a liability shift that is going to occur in October of 2015, where if a merchant in processing a transaction, if it's a chip card they're presented with and they don't process it as a chip transaction, if their reader isn't able to do that, then they're going to be accountable if there's any fraud. They're going to have the liability for any fraud associated with that transaction. So there's an incentive out there to start to replace these terminals with EMV-compatible terminals. So it's for standard point-of-sale terminals, it's October 2015. For fuel dispensers, it's October 2017. So you'll see over time, I think, increased deployment of EMV or chip and PIN, chip and signature cards. In fact, some banks and credit unions in the consumer space are already starting to issue them to their customers to get ready. Some merchants are already starting to roll out the terminals that can handle a chip transaction.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio. And for contractors out there, yes, we're going to get into some acceptance thing for cards for contractors. So keep listening. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is David Shea. David is the honcho for the charge card program for GSA, which basically means he manages a program across the government. And let's talk a little bit about how you do this. You know, we mentioned the AOPCs, the top dogs at each agency. You get together with these guys how often?
We get together with them frequently in a number of ways. First off, we have quarterly AOPC meetings where we cover current issues.
Face-to-face?
Yes. They're
live.
Offered. They're
yeah.
Right. They're offered both face-to-face and online, mm-hmm. So they can call in if need be. And then every month I do something called Discussions with Dave, and this is an unstructured conference call with anyone working the program, card manager who wants to call in and raise an issue. And I have found those to be a wonderful tool because as things come up, we have a chance to talk with them. And when the meeting, when you know it really hits its stride, Mark, is when the agency starts sharing with one another what they're doing to address common challenges. It's really cool to hear them do that and learn from one another, and it lifts the whole program. You know, it lifts all boats when they're sharing like that. So we have a very aggressive program, and I'll mention a few other meetings that we have. We have a data management group, which we've set up to help manage and improve the practices related to data analytics on the program. We're really stepping up there to help agencies manage the program. There are a lot of tools that were already available, but we're taking this to another level, and we're involving that. And it's everything from how you use the data mining tools available under the program, how you use what we call the electronic access systems that the banks provide, reports that you can run, program-wide metrics where we're looking at how well are we doing overall, mm-hmm. Identifying potential improvement opportunities, talking about strategic sourcing, talking about compliance and controls and things like that. So we also have the data management group.
Okay. Let me when you're doing the discussion of the analytics and the data mining, are you relying primarily on data that the bank provides you? Do you have other data that you bring in? Is there sort of a mix between the two?
There is a mix. Primarily, it's bank data or data that the banks provide through their partners, mm-hmm. That we use. We have built a data warehouse. We receive transactions every business day. We have more than 2 terabytes of uncompressed. It's compressed in the system, but uncompressed, we have 2 terabytes of data in the system and transactions coming in every day on purchase and travel. And that enables us to mine that data for all kinds of reports to help us generate new products, to help identify problem areas, to answer questions regarding things like top travel spend. You know, we get asked, what are the top hotel or airlines that the government uses? How much are we spending on office supplies and things like that? I mean, we can run that data in minutes, whereas before it used to be at least partially a manual process where you would go ask the particular bank. And remember, we've got 3 banks.
So I remember when we used to get the reports every year from banks saying, top spend was the VA medical prescriptions. And, I remember that.
Well, these reports we can run, like I say, almost instantaneously. And the data is only at the most 3 days old, because it comes into an area called staging, and before it gets loaded into the warehouse, there's generally like a 2 to 3 day time lag. So we're working with the agencies on building dashboards so we can show views of the data. And I think there are a lot more uses for this data in terms of internal controls and metrics and things like that. So we're working on that as well. So you can see there's a lot of communication going on between these monthly meetings, quarterly meetings, data management group meetings. We've got the data warehouse cranking. And we even set up working groups on particular topics, like after the Charge Card Abuse Prevention Act came out that we mentioned earlier. We formed a working group of interested agencies to develop some of the operational policies in terms of how would we take that law and operationalize it in the program. So there's a lot of agency involvement. And the agencies, by and large, the agencies do an excellent job managing the program internal to themselves. It's a big job.
And when you get these people together sharing those best practices, we found this through, you know, data mining, whatever, this kind of spend. And, you know, go back to the hotels. If you have X hotel that's getting 42% of the travel spend for hotel, you have a little bit of leverage.
Right. And you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because you could look at there's a collection of merchant category codes, and this is a coding scheme the industry uses to classify types of businesses,
right,
like gas stations or hotels or whatever. And so you might look at what we call the SIN codes. You might look at like a liquor store and say, okay, well, I'm going to run a report and see what spending is at a liquor store. And when you find it, it doesn't automatically mean there's a problem. What it means is you've got to go explore that issue a little bit further. And, you know, it could be it was a military chaplain buying sacramental wine, and it's perfectly fine, you know. Or you see a casino, and that might be a red flag to many people until you learn that it was for a meeting room, you know. So you see the breadth of what the government does every day is truly staggering. And I don't think it's possible for really for any one person to totally understand. But because of that, it drives some unique spending. And this is where, when you talk about the training and the people, Mark, they have to be able to understand, well, when I see this, it's not automatically a red flag.
Right.
It's questionable. I'm going to go look at it. And then based on the facts, I'm going to decide what then needs to be done. Because on the surface, things might look a little strange sometimes. But when you peel that onion, more often than not, you find it was a totally appropriate expenditure.
Yeah, and you know, just anecdotally, I do not go into any gambling part of any casino, but I have spoken at a few at this point. I don't like going there because I have an addictive personality and I don't want to walk into one of those other rooms, but I have been invited to speak at a number of them.
Well, so, you know, you look at some parts of the country, particularly out west, and the government is a huge land management enterprise in part, and where are there places to have large meetings?
Yep.
And
wonderful meeting rooms.
Well, and in some cases, that's what you, I mean, in other cases, yeah, you may see transactions at other places where there happens to be meeting rooms that you know, when you look at the merchant name, you're like, what the heck is this? And then you find out it's one of the few places in town or in that area where people could meet.
Also, you get very competitive meeting room rates because the owners of those places assume that X percentage of the people will go into the casinos. So whether or not that's accurate, I don't know, but oftentimes at those types of resorts, you can get a very competitive rate for meeting room.
Yeah. From my perspective, the issue really is effective internal controls,
yeah,
and people understanding the data. And I think this is where we have this great dialogue between the agencies and the Office of Charge Card Management and others. It's understanding what these things really mean and what's really going on so you can manage the program effectively.
Okay. We're going to take our last break here. When we come back, we are going to talk about some of the issues impacting the contractor community, accepting the charge cards, and pretty much anybody with a government contract is required to accept charge cards.
Well, on schedule,
yeah,
on GSA schedule for micro purchases, it is required. That's correct.
Okay. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today again is David Shea. David is in charge of the SmartPay program, the charge card program for the government. And let's talk about that vendor side. What are the vendor requirements? How if you're relatively new to the government, or if you've been in the government for a while and you still don't accept the card, what do you do?
Well, the program rides the rails of the standard commercial charge card program. So if you as a merchant accept charge cards, you can accept a SmartPay card. There's nothing special or unique you have to do to accept a government card. But I would encourage the merchant community to know their customer, to follow the rules from their acquirer, and the appropriate charge card network, Visa, MasterCard, or whatever. There are fraudsters out there who are able to generate account numbers. Anybody's account number, it doesn't necessarily be a government card. It could be any card. So before you ship a product or service or accept payment of it, you not only have to have the account number, and our government account numbering is unique. And if a merchant wants to learn more about how to identify our cards, they can go to our website, smartpay.gsa.gov. And on there's a section for vendors and merchants. So there's a lot of good information for them on what our cards look like, how some of the numbering.
The prefixes, yeah.
Right. The so-called BIN, bank identification number. But the main thing is that, in terms of preventing yourself from becoming a victim of these external fraudsters as a merchant, as you not only have the account number, but that you're getting the expiration date, you're getting that CVV 2 number on the back, the 3 digits, you're getting the name. If you just rely on account number only and ship, and you would think this wouldn't happen, but it does, you end up getting stuck with the bill because it wasn't, an actual account number. And so, you can go on the internet and you can see these programs that generate account numbers on the internet. So you can, anybody could come up with a bogus account number. What's important is sort of the 3 or 4 other pieces of data to verify that you've got a real account number, the genuine item, before you ship, protect yourself from fraud. And this isn't just associated with government. This is any card. Make sure you have complied with your acquirers and your network's procedures for doing this, because otherwise, as a merchant, you're going to get stuck with the cost of that item you just shipped when you didn't follow the policy.
Yep.
And so the other thing is, when you talk about contract requirements, under the GSA supply schedules, it is mandatory that the vendors accept the card for micro purchases. So purchases, generally speaking, of $3,000 and below per transaction. It's optional in many cases for the contractors, GSA supply schedule contractors, to accept the card above that dollar level. Some choose to, some do not. And then under the strategic sourcing BPAs or blanket purchasing agreements, there may be other unique requirements for card acceptance.
Level
3 is another issue. And as you mentioned, on the BPAs, level 3 is mandatory. Mm-hmm. So level 3 is where we get that line item detail, which says not only how much you spent at a particular vendor, but what particular items that you bought. And level 3 data is still the golden chalice that we're all chasing. It's not just in the government, it's in the private sector, because we want to understand our spend and we want to have the internal controls in place to prevent misuse or abuse. And I would think that industry would want to enjoy the benefits of inventory control and inventory management associated with these kind of things.
Well, speaking as a vendor, we accept level 3. You know my processor. We won't name them. But we enjoy a processing cost saving as a result of taking cards at level three.
Right, because
for the vendors, that's important.
Yes, absolutely, because the brands recognize there are other clients, customers of the process that want this data. So they're going to incentivize you as a merchant to provide what they call a data-rich transaction. So the more data you provide when a purchase is made from you, the lower your transaction cost is going to be. So generally, you'll see there's a process they go through called qualification. So they qualify your transactions. So when your transactions as a merchant go through your acquirer, okay, and the government doesn't contract for any of this on the GSA side,
right?
Okay, that vendor is going to slot that transaction in a certain place in the billing structure based on whether you have level three or not. I mean, level two is where you break out taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so their systems, when they're processing your billings, are going to look to see that there's data in those fields. And if there's data in there, you're going to get that lower rate, you know, particularly if you provide the level three. But it's important that that data be genuine. You know, in some cases, we see numbers plugged into a tax field, for example, that aren't taxes. And I think it's rare, but you'll see merchants trying to qualify for a lower processing rate by putting something
simply in filling in a blank.
Right. And it ends up, you know, it doesn't work long term because, I mean, the government, most of our transactions, particularly on a purchase card or a centrally billed travel card, are going to be tax exempt. So when we were talking about data warehouse and reports and oversight, you know, one of the things that we look at is taxes, because most of the time the federal government is tax exempt. So we want to make sure, you know, that the data is accurate. If we see taxes in there, we're going to go back and ask what this is.
Yep. Yeah. You mentioned a couple minutes ago that some vendors opt not to accept warrant cards for certain orders. Why? You know, if the transaction's above 3,000 or 4,000, 5,000, why? I don't understand the logic in not accepting the order right away, because you're really possibly going to lose that order.
Well, I think, you know, the merchant, vendor, or contractor has to look at the marketplace that they're in, look at their competition, look at their cost structure, and do what's best for them. But you're right. You know, in some industries, the card is so widely accepted that not accepting it could put you at a competitive disadvantage. In other cases, I think it's an educational issue where the merchant doesn't understand the value proposition the card program may present to them in terms of cash flow, like we indicated earlier, or data, or security, or reduced costs for them handling things as opposed to checks and cash. So they really have to look at the value proposition and understand that cards as one sort of sales lane or payment method, you know, what it offers them. But I think in many cases, the more they learn about the advantages of the card program, and the big issue is interchange. You know, what do they pay to have a transaction processed? And where's that line that they cross as you go up in the dollar value of a transaction,
right?
Mark, you know, if you're paying 2%, 3% or 4% of a transaction,
you're not processing a level three.
Well, you may or may not but the point is that, you know, and the other thing is your acquirer or your processor competitive? I mean, a lot of suppliers or merchants, contractors, vendors may default to their existing servicing bank, for example,
right,
for card services, as opposed to maybe shopping around where maybe they could get a better rate. So it's that's one question, is are you getting a good rate to begin with? And the second question is, when you look at the reports that your acquirer gives you or that you can ask for, what are your transactions qualifying for when they're being processed? In other words, you could be sitting there thinking, these are all level three, so I'm enjoying this lower processing rate. But when you actually look at it, it may be for one reason or another your transactions aren't meeting the level three criteria from your processor or acquirer, and they're kicking it down to a level two or a level one and billing you a higher cost for processing.
Right. That, you know, it's a danger zone. So if you're going to process at level three, do it right. Do you want to talk about SmartPay 3 at all before we wrap up?
There's not much that I can say.
How far out are we?
Well, our current contract, SmartPay 2, end November of 2018.
Okay.
So here we are in 2014, and that may seem like a lot of time, but really not. You're exactly right.
They're already planning for the census too.
Well, yeah, and we're starting our planning. We're getting into the market research phase. You know, our big concern at GSA is to provide the payment and products, payment product services under SmartPay that the agencies need to support mission. And, you know, this market space is always changing. I mean, you've got issues with mobile, you've got issues with cardless, you've got issues with data, EMV, chip cards, you've got issues with controls, you've got issues with things like electronic wallets and e-purses, and you've got tie-ins to other markets where cards might be able to be used along with other functions like transit or for employee identification. When you look at mobile, I mean, what role would agencies use a card built into a phone for? Does everybody have a smartphone where they could avail themselves of the technology? What are the capabilities that people want? So these are all the kind of things that we're looking into.
Probably that you discuss at your meetings with the AOPCs.
We always have an ear open to what are their needs.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's our job to understand what's happening in the marketplace. But if you go back to SmartPay 2, if you remember what happened there, we awarded the contracts 18 months before they became active handling transactions. And the reason we did that was, as you remember, we have two layers of competition under this program. First layer, we award the contracts to the banks,
right,
the master contracts. And then the second layer, the larger agencies will run competitions amongst those, in this case it was three, those three banks to win their task order business. So you've got those two levels of competition going on, and you've got to permit the time for that to take place. Plus, once an agency selects a bank, the long pole in the tent is building the interface between the bank and the general ledger system of that agency's accounting system. So we've got to allow for time of that. So, you know, allow time for that. So I'm not saying it's necessarily 18 months this time, but historically, if you look back,
better to give the time than not.
Right, because you want a lot of thought put into this, because you want, you know, the agencies to be happy with the process that they got, for the card deployment to go seamlessly, for the data to be there, and all those other kinds of things. And it definitely takes time. So, yeah, 2018 is not that far away.
Cool. David Shea, always a pleasure to have you in, man. Anytime you got something to talk about, give me a shout.
Yep, great to be here. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio. This is not my day job. If your company needs help, I won't help you with a SmartPay card. There are a lot of companies out there. The banks will help you, and the GSA website will help you. But I can help you with your marketing to the government, and particularly if you're not leveraging LinkedIn, give me a call. Reach me at mark@federaldirect.net, and thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.